Hey, Rent to Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, and I am joined today by Andrew Lucas. He is the founder of the Deal Finders Club, probably the guy who found the first deal in the Deal Finders Club, if I had to take a shot in the dark. So, Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Adam, yes, you are right. I was probably the first one in the club to find the deal.
So tell us a little bit. We always like to know kind of the origin stories. So tell me about the first deal you found. Why you made it and how it went.
So this is the first deal is really one of the reasons that we started the Deal Finders Club, because I made every mistake in the book. And if it wasn't for, you know, the grace of God and appreciation, we would have lost a lot of money on that too. But so I'll tell you how we found it. I was in college, paying rent to all these landlords. And I said, man, I just thought that they were the richest people in the world. I was like, these guys got it made. They don't have to do anything. And I give them $700 a month. And that was the rent for the whole 3-bedroom house back then. I was like thinking that was a lot. And come to find out, they had to have been bankrupt. I don't know how they made payments. But so coming out of college, I said, I don't want to rent anymore. Like, this is terrible. I got a job. I was a manager at a hotel, and I did not make much money. But this was 2007, and they would give a loan to pretty much anybody, I guess. October 27, 2007, I was able to get in, got some down payment assistance from the county and the city, first-time home buyer kind of stuff. This is the one mistake I didn't make. I actually got the house, left closing with a check for about $350. So it was no money out of pocket. Looking back now, I'm like, wow, that was a pretty good deal. But here's where it went wrong. I found the property by just driving around, saw the real estate agent sign, and I called that agent and said, hey, can you help me buy this house? And my assumption is that he would help me negotiate. And I was asking because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know any better. I thought that agent would help me get a better deal for myself. Well, we know now that's not true. That agent didn't really care about me. He was just excited that now he's getting 6% versus 3%. And that that investor that I was buying from, he's selling a ton of his properties. So he's making him happy. That's all he cared about. So when I went to him with questions of like, are you sure I should buy this? This floor looks a little wonky. His answer was, looks good to me, whatever, go for it. He wasn't helping me do that. So I didn't negotiate anything. I paid asking price. I went in there just green as could be. And then we bought it, and it was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. And me and my infinite wisdom and my roommate at the time, we tore down a wall to make it a 2-bedroom house because we wanted a party room, essentially, right? Just somewhere.
Maximizing value. That's what I heard you say.
Exactly. Maximizing real estate value by eliminating a bedroom so that we could have a ping pong table. So that's what we did. But again, time, and I'll say this a lot, and you guys probably say this a lot, that in real estate, time can heal all those bad mistakes. In order to rent to retirement, you're going to be in it for time. I bought that property with the plan, the idea, the thought that it would be for retirement. I didn't care about that day. I said, in 30 years, this will be fine. And that was my mentality, because in hospitality, there wasn't much of a retirement plan. That was it. I said, well, in 30 years, this is in a college town area. The students will be paying me by then, $1,000 a month, whatever. And I can use this for retirement. That's how we got the deal. That's how we made all the mistakes. 10 months later, I actually moved out. I got another job and started renting my 1-bedroom, and I put the wall back. I had learned a little bit. We put the wall back, and that was back to a 3-bedroom, and rented both of them for years. I just sold it post-COVID. Yeah.
It's an expensive ping pong table.
It was a very expensive ping pong table. It was a terrible idea. But, that's why we created, literally why we created the Deal Finders Club, because I didn't know. I mean, there's just so many things you don't know until you get in a room, in a setting, listen to a podcast like this, and and hear those questions, hear those terms, hear the thought process behind it. Because I had no clue. And then we ended up buying three more properties over the next 10 years, all with the retirement mindset of, it doesn't really matter if we get a great deal right now. We just want it in 30 years. We've since fixed that mindset.
So tell me, you mentioned kind of having all those mistakes and kind of the things you didn't know before you got into the first deal. How did that change? You know, how did you approach deal two that was different than deal one?
Well, deal two was right across the street from that deal. I went down, I came into town, one of the tenants had an issue or whatever. I fixed a toilet flapper or whatever the stupid deal was. And the house across the street had been, the grass had grown up, totally overgrown. And I knew from living there that it was an older guy that lived there. And so I assumed he had passed away. And then I sent a letter to what was on the tax record to see if they would, you know, want to sell. And this is, I feel like I was way ahead of my time back then, because this was like 2009 or 10. So there was no like prop stream and there was no data stuff online. I just, you know, luckily our county had access there. But what I learned was that we had to get a little bit more creative to buy it. Because I couldn't go back and get another mortgage the way I did last time. And we were talking to friends, talking to coworkers and people in our community about that rental house and how we wanted to do more like that. So we were actually able to get the funding from that one using a partner. And so we partnered up and we went to the bank after being partners, where we kind of put our finances together. And then the bank was able to lend it to us, and we were able to go and rehab it and put that one into service as a rental. So it was that deal kind of taught us how to look for some better funding opportunities, right? How to put the deal together. We ended up doing some rehab on that one. Our next deal, I'd say kind of we learned how to look further into the future, like not what is today's market, but is this going to be a good rental late after we move out? Because we moved into one and we said, is this going to be a good rental when we don't live here? Like, what does this neighborhood look like? Is this growing? Is this a bad spot? There were places we thought we might want to buy, but we saw potential for a downturn in the near future. So that's where at one deal after another, we started learning and listening. We didn't actually do any education. I didn't go into a course, a class, read a book even, until we had four rental properties doing it this way. I'm just kind of like out there making mistakes. And then we read, one of my agents, our real estate agent, gave me the book called Hold. It's yellow and I can't think of who's wrote it. But anyway, it's called Hold. And that's where we actually learned how to evaluate rental properties and do the math, you know, the right way, and make sure that we're buying stuff that would last until retirement. So there was a lot of learning by doing in our beginning stages.
Yeah. So what are, you know, you mentioned reading that book and learning to evaluate. What are some of the metrics that you like using now with your current deals? Do you have any particular ones that you find most helpful? And I'm assuming, you know, people are going to want to know, you know, if you have different metrics for single family versus the bigger properties. But what are some things that you like to look at when you're evaluating a deal?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it can change. It can change. It will change based per property, but also it can change based on your financing. What's the market look like, right? So in general, what we kind of started doing is looking at, and we're in Columbia, South Carolina, so our market may be different than yours or wherever, but here we were able to find that it made sense for us and our business if we go and buy a property and we have leverage, we have debt on it, that as long as we can cash flow, meaning our insurance is paid, taxes are paid, property management, and some savings for repairs, maintenance, and vacancy. As long as all of that is taken care of, then we need to make about $150 to $200 per unit. And so that used to be 200 to 250. We've kind of edged down because prices have gone up. But so we're still good in that range. So just say 200 bucks. If we can make $200 on this duplex per unit, so it's a $400 cash flow property, then we're good. We're going for it, right? The biggest part of that is understanding when you do that metric is how much money is left in the deal. So if you have to put 20% down and buy a $300,000 duplex to make $400 a month, I don't know if those numbers are going to work out, right? So I shake those, do those numbers. And typically, we like to do what's called the BRRRR method, which I'm sure you know what it is, where we buy it, rehab it, rent it, and then refinance. So we can leave as little money in the deal because we're only making 150 to 200 per month cash flow, right? So we want to make sure that our return on those dollars are good enough, you know, that the percentage is good enough. So if we can get in the deal and only leave, basically, we like to say less than 20,000. If we've left less than $20,000, then we're good with our $200 a month.
Yeah. All right. So what about the, you know, that goes, have you gone into the 5+ and into that world? Or do you look at cap rates at all? Because a lot of people like to look at cap rates when they first start thinking, but that's really more of a commercial thing, in my opinion. But
yeah, I'm glad you said that, because we have moved from single family, which is what we started with, and now we're, you know, duplexes and tris and quads, so now we're trying to get up and above. So we have 16, 12, and 2 10s, right, unit properties. So that's kind of our sweet spot now. And people, and I still get these emails where it's a single family house and someone throws on a cap rate. I'm like, what? Why are you? We don't use cap rates for this. This doesn't make any sense. And even in like a 10 unit property, yes, you could put a cap rate on it, but the cap rate is just, it's what you as a buyer want to say that you're making on that deal, right? Percentage wise. And it makes a lot of sense, again, if you're paying cash or if you're leaving a lot of money in there, or when you're looking to resell, because it's just kind of a metric that people say, this town is a 6% cap rate, all right? And if you can buy it at 8, well, then, ooh, you got a deal. Well, if it's for your cash flow and for your retirement or whatever, you know, your business, that cap rate is just, it doesn't really matter, right? And that's, at this, what we're buying, right? So obviously it makes sense for bigger units, you know, 150, 300 units, whatever. You got to have a metric that everybody agrees with, and that's it. But it doesn't make sense for the scale we buy on.
Yeah. So your Deal Finders Club, we mentioned, you know, we were talking a little bit beforehand, and you said a word that Zach and I like to talk about a lot, and that's mindset. And so tell me a little bit about how your mindset changed when you bought your first investment property, and how you see your, you know, Deal Club members' mindset changing as they go through their investing journey.
It's such a, I don't know how to say what it does to people when they actually close a deal, but it's literally like there's a door and a wall here, and on the other side is all this opportunity, and it's the whole wide world of opportunity. But people that haven't actually seen it happen are on the wrong side of the door. And then when they close a deal, or they see someone really close to them and they see it really nitty gritty and see all the pieces, they see that happen and it becomes real life. Like, this is possible, and the whole world opens to possibility. I don't know how many years ago, in 2007, I never thought that we would be buying, that this would be our day job. Like, my wife and I, this is all we do. And we never thought that we'd have over 100 and something units of real estate, and that this can be such a beautiful business. We were just looking for a place to live. And I had a guy who would be my roommate and help pay the bills, right? That was it. And after doing that one, it literally changed. My brain wiring changed and started looking for the next one. And that's how I found the one across the street, right? And so that's one of the first things we teach. And not to say that I saw every deal after that. The one that kicked us still kicks me in the behind, and that we share all the time with our group, is Michelle and I, my wife, we moved to a new house and started renting the old house, right? We're still investment mindset, right? We were renting the other house, but the house we moved into across the street, we knew that it was a tenant situation. They got evicted. We knew going into it that that was going to change. And as we were moving, they were getting evicted. Their stuff was on the front lawn while my wife's parents are helping us move. Like, how embarrassing, right? As the husband that's bought your daughter a brand new house, and this is
where this is the neighborhood.
This is where we live. So, but we sat there, and I sat there on the front porch, and we had a, he was what, 3-4 months old. So we'd sit on the front porch and just kind of rocking. And we saw the clean out crew, the bank ended up taking over. It was it's a bad situation for the older lady. But anyway, like the bank ended up taking it over because she couldn't pay the payments after having to kick the people out. And they tore up the house so bad that she couldn't get a tenant. And we watched it just sit there and just kept watching. And then finally someone came and cleaned it up. And then the bank finally listed it, and I saw it sit there. And then I watched a guy make an offer, buy it. And I sat there and I watched the guy flip the house and make $75,000 right in front of us. But my brain was not in the investor space of there's an opportunity here for someone that wants to buy and flip. We hit four, maybe, I don't know how many rentals at the time. I think it was probably four. But that was where my brain was like, I like to buy and hold, and that's not it. And so in our club and people that we talk to, it's not what's for me. It's where's their opportunity? Because I didn't know what wholesaling was back then. I didn't know how to flip or any of that. But I sat and watched opportunity right in front of my face and just go to someone else without even trying to see if we could do something with it. So that day, like after... not that day, but after that all sunk in, that's when my brain shifted into there's opportunity in real estate, and I've got to be on the lookout for deals, whether it's a rental, a flip, a multi-unit, whatever it is. So that was just crucial days in my life, and I'm so sad and upset that we missed it, but it put us here, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, it worked out, and time helped.
Yeah,
help heal that wound.
Yeah, heal the wounds.
So what are some of the things as people come into, your world and the Deal Finders Club, what are some of the common things that y'all have to get over, to help people really be able to see what you saw and that there are deals everywhere? What are some of the common, stumbling blocks that your people hit?
It's not even new people. It's the old people or experienced people as well. And it is the same really five things that come every time. And hopefully I'll remember all five without looking at my cheat sheet. But there's doubt. The first one is like, there's no way I could do this. Like, this is not possible. Why would someone accept $50,000 for a $75,000 house, right? But it happens all the time. There's doubt. There's distraction. There's, especially in today's age, people will come to our live events. Maybe they saw us on social media or whatever, and they're like fired up for real estate. And then 1 month later, they don't show up anymore. And we're like, well, what happened to them? Oh, they're fired up about crypto, right? And it's, well, now they're fired up about, I don't know what else is out there now. I don't know, baseball cards. I heard somebody saying they're doing baseball cards now. I'm like, seriously? but it's real. It is so real. And if you can't focus and say, this is the thing I'm going to do, you won't ever do it. You will not get through to actually find that deal. Doubt, distraction, discomfort. This is very uncomfortable. It is very, very uncomfortable to make an offer to buy someone's property at a discount, because in our society, our homes have become like a part of people's identity for whatever reason, and you know, the American dream or whatever, and people have been taught that that's their biggest investment and that's what's going to make them wealthy and rich. And it moves property and homes into out of what they are, which is just an asset that can be bought, sold, traded. There's no emotion in that. It moves into a very emotional space, and we internalize that, and we assume that that person feels emotional about it. So we feel like we can't make a rational offer, which might be supported by facts and, you know, numbers, but because of the emotions involved. So it gets uncomfortable to do that. And so it stops them in their tracks. And now I can't remember what are my other shoot. I got my cheat sheet. Is it I had to get it from under here. Disappointment. I forgot about that one. So the disappointment comes when we get into this business and we try to buy a property and we make mistakes, or someone says no. And it's again one of those things that will just stop people if they haven't experienced any success or seen it. So again, I feel like social media gets people fired up about something, but they don't have real substance. They haven't seen success. They haven't seen somebody do it, or really seen it real close, real tangible. And so one little tiny disappointment or one tiny no, and it knocks them off, right? They just didn't have a real good foundation. And the final one, and this is not a problem. This is where people finally figure it out, which is discovery. So with discovery is when you realize that this business is possible, that you busted through the distractions, the disappointments are fleeting, and you no longer doubt it because you've gotten a deal, you've gotten somebody to agree to sell at a discount, you've gotten a property under contract, maybe you own it, you're a landlord, you're building for, you know, retirement or whatever that is. So it is very difficult. And you talked about the mindset. This is a very difficult business to jump into because most people have other jobs. They have other things going on. And you're like, I'm going to add this thing on. And this is hard. And so you have to, like, I tell people every time they come to us, if they want help or they're just getting started, it's like, you need to realize this is not easy. This is not get rich quick. This is a lifestyle. It's a mindset. And it can be very profitable for you, but you have to push through to get to that age of discovery. So I hope that wasn't too long-winded for you.
No, that was great.
Yeah. That's a big, big piece of it for us.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about kind of where you see the market now. I know you're saying you can find deals at any time, but I would love to hear two things for you. Number one, where you think the real estate market is headed in general. But also, I'd love to hear a little bit, as you say, you can find deals in any environment. So how did your view of finding deals, or how did finding deals change during the pandemic and then as we come out of it? Has it really changed at all? Has it changed a lot? Kind of how has that part gone for finding deals in the market?
Absolutely. And so let me just hit on real quick kind of where I think the market's going. And I'll just say that I have no idea. I'm just going to keep going with what we have. But the evidence, if you go back, you know, the thing is the evidence is that real estate is the right decision because of all the factors around it, which is the tax benefits, appreciation, debt pay, all those things. But we have to also realize, if we get into real estate has never been a short-term investment opportunity, right? It's not penny stocks and what is the currency trading? What do they call that? Forex or whatever. It's not that stuff where it's really quick turn, right? Yes, when people flip properties, it's relatively quick. But the general consensus of real estate investing is that we're going to hold it for a long time, right? And so if we're saying I'm not going to buy this rental house because the market might change in the next 6 months, well, the next 6 months market has zero bearing on your investment because you should be planning to hold that for 10 years or so, or whatever that looks like. So we're bullish on it, you know. Interest rates, I think we're heading into a really good place for real estate. But we also know that they could change the interest rates and then that's gone. So it's hard to say. We're like, don't change anything. Just go at it. Just stay consistent. And the finding deals through the pandemic, that is a really good question because it really did change a lot. And we don't sit and think about it that often, but there's a few things that I know for a fact that changed. One thing that during the pandemic was a little scary is that the municipalities, so the tax records, the county where the register of deeds are held and the liens and that kind of stuff, that there was a lot of data that was only available to go down to the courthouse and pull it by hand. But as we know, they shut down many courthouses, right? And most government entities shut down. And maybe even when they opened, it was very limited. And so what we saw was that they wouldn't allow any attorneys or title work, title abstractors to go in and pull the data they needed. So what does that mean? That forced these municipalities to go online and go online well. And so now there's a lot more information, a lot more the deeds, the records. There's so much more available online and easily accessible, right? So some of that was there before, but it was really hard to get access to it or whatever. Now I feel like they've made that easier. So for title work and stuff. The other thing is that sellers became used to doing work, whatever it is, just making big decisions over Zoom or over the phone or over text message, even to where I'm blown away by how many people, if you think before COVID versus after, how many people are buying and selling properties with never seeing the seller or the homeowner. They're never meeting. There's not this like, we're going to talk to you in your home. There's a lot of it where the sellers are agreeing over Zoom to sell their house to somebody. And again, with, like I was talking about earlier, the emotional piece of real estate, that just didn't happen before. So there's opportunity there, you know, that there's so many people now that are doing this business virtually. And I know that came out of the pandemic for sure. So for us, we actually are using that to our advantage, because we only buy and service our local area. And so we kind of turn it on its head and say, hey, look, we're local. We're not some of these out-of-state people that are just going to try to buy your house over the phone. We're local. We'll come and sit with you and talk with you. We know our market, that kind of thing. So it is an opportunity for them, but we use it against them.
I love it. Well, the website is dealfindersclub.com. That's dealfindersclub.com. Tell people a little bit about what they're going to see when they get there and who is best served joining your club.
Yeah. So dealfindersclub.com/resources is a place where you can get resources like contracts and forms, scripts, and things like that. So you can actually get to a deal and close the deal if you needed to. Deal Finders Club is there for people trying to get their first, second, third deal. And by deal, I mean a discounted piece of property. We have the resources there, YouTube channel, this podcast here would be linked there, where we just show you the path of what's happened. And so the people that should be there, that should come there, are those that are looking for those first couple of deals or to build a business based on finding discount real estate in your own community. We want to be, and we want to show you how to be the home buyer, the local home buyer in your community. And so that starts with people that people that live near you and those types of things. So that's our market. That's what we work on showing people how to do, because you can get started with that just where you are, who you are. You don't have to change. You don't have to move. You can just go out there and find a piece of discounted property. So that's who we talk to. That's who is best served by coming and learning from us. And that's the people that actually come back and show us the deals they got.
All right. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Again, the website is dealfindersclub.com. And as Andrew said, if you go to dealfindersclub.com/resources, you'll see a whole lot more of what they have to offer. We'll put a link to all of this in our show notes, but really appreciate you joining us. To everybody out there, if you want to see some finished deals, not distressed properties that need help, but in terms of rehab or new builds, you can head over to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. And as always, if you have any questions, email them to podcasts@renttoretirement.com. That's podcasts@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves today. We'll talk to you on the next episode.